It's not fair. I'm going to make a policy that you can't arrest just on...
Just on that? Well, that would be a progressive policy.
That's what I'm saying. He's because this is trying to be progressive.
Yeah.
For all the other stuff that he's not progressive.
Yeah, yeah. But he's already said he wasn't for any kind of free transit. So that's kind of a contradiction there. Sir Charles Faker blows with the wind. But out in Worcester, second biggest city in New England, west of Boston, there was some sort of think tank or NGO did a study saying, hey, you could do completely free bus service for $8 million, which is low money even for Worcester's entire budget.
$8 million a year.
Yeah. And now people in the independent socialist group out in Worcester are putting forward, but you have to expand the system. And we should introduce light rail to the equation. Mm-hmm. Light rail because trams, because there's so much empty room in Worcester from deindustrialization and just poverty.
They don't have a metro system. They don't have any
nothing. Needs light rail really bad, which could connect to where they do have a central train station for commuter rail. So you can connect to that station.
That can expand.
And the city, unfortunately, is giving money to a new minor league ballpark for the Red Sox. Minor league team, they're from Pawtucket. The Paw Sox are going to Worcester, the Wo Sox or something, and using city money partially, which is ridiculous because, you know, Worcester has a lot of money, but not as much as some of the other cities. But any city paying for a private ballpark is just crazy. Or a private team to come in and exploit that area or whatever. It's right in the middle of Worcester, too. They're doing it. But if you're going to do that, it looks like it's going through the thing. Then you would bring in, more public transit like light rail and so on would make a lot of sense. They're going to create like all these traffic jams and stuff if this thing gets created. If the ballpark gets done, it's already started. They've already started the initial construction, by the way. But anyway, before we get into more free transit, let's take a short break. You said you brought some Duke Ellington, which we're going to say is political music.
Number eight.
Wow, that went in hard. I hope it works. We've had trouble with the CD players here at the station. Most people play tracks from the computerized system, but I prefer the old CDs for now.
The name of this song is Saddest Tale, came in around the Depression time, 1934.
Okay, so you're listening to Socialist Radio, Diego and Jeff, and we're going to be back in about 4 minutes. How long is the song?
About 4 minutes.
Maybe a little longer than that. And we'll be here till 1, so please come back. We're going to be talking about free transit and get back into the elections a little bit, maybe. And also Earth Day, 50th anniversary of Earth Day, April 22nd, and climate strikes around Earth Day. So here we go and do some Duke Ellington.
tales told on land and sea. Is a tale they told when they told the truth on me.
That was Duke Ellington with Chelsea Bridge. Before that, Saddest Tale. Saddest Tale, I think we can say, was political. Chelsea Bridge.
It took place in the Depression, 1934.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. So but, yeah, this is from Duke Ellington, Masterpieces.
This is what was being played in speakeasies throughout, you know, the U.S.
Yep.
And jukeboxes when they were still popular.
And it's from Duke Ellington, Masterpieces, 1926-1949.
Yeah.
So, we usually play different, you know, punk or whatever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I liked it. That
Depression
was good.
Depression era.
That was good.
Know.
Yep.
Black History Month, too, will be in
the It is. It is. Yep. And, but, oh, yeah, by the way, I saw this book I really wanted to read. I think her name is Margaret Kimberly. Margie Kimberly. I'm not sure if I have her first name right. Kimberly is her last name. She writes for Black Agenda Report, which I would highly recommend people read. It's also, they do some podcasts, some radio, and they're largely, I mean, they've kind of, you know, in my opinion, don't fully understand Sanders and the Democratic Party, but they are more critical of the Democratic Party than most these days. and most leftists these days. So they stayed, you know, they stayed with a Marxist, more or less, analysis there. It veers away some points, but this
is Black Agenda?
Yeah, Black Agenda Report. Okay. And but it's worth reading. And so she has a new book, apparently, about the presidents, like all the presidents, or a certain selection of them. I haven't read it yet, so I'm not sure. And their policies towards, you know, African Americans, and policies on, you know, politics affecting Black people most directly, and so on. And I'm dying to read that. I just saw a reference to it the other day. Hey, before we get into more of that free transit stuff, which is a big issue in my opinion, because if you're going to talk, you know, if you're going to talk the talk about green anything, then you got to walk the walk. And the main thing is, people can't afford green technologies. They can't afford your, you know, say you do pass, say it gets passed, some sort of, like has happened, there is light rail existing out there, meaning passenger rail in cities, dedicated lines, you know, all that. That exists. I was just in Minneapolis not that long ago, and I was taking the light rail around. And that exists, but it's usually not extensive enough. It's still too expensive. And if you really want people to ride that stuff a lot and have the money to expand it, this is going to sound counterintuitive, but you got to make it free. If you make it free, it gets popular. If you make it popular, people will find ways to pressure for the money and so on. And again, I'm not advocating any kind of tax on working people, because we're taxed enough. It's got to be taxes on the super rich, the big corporations, cut military spending, that kind of thing. Anyway, before we get more into that, a couple public service announcements here from WMFO. Tufts Free Forum, commercial-free, community-based radio. And again, we're a little slice of that community-based socialist radio. It's talking music from a working-class, democratic, socialist perspective. Here every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Winter health public service announcement. One of the best ways to protect yourself from colds, flu, and other transmissible disease illnesses like the coronavirus. I think they came up with a new name for that today or yesterday. But anyway, is to wash your hands before touching any part of your face or eating, especially if you've been touching shared surfaces like doorknobs and railings. Germs are often spread when a person touches something that is contaminated with germs and then touches their eyes, nose, or mouth. Be sure to eat right and get plenty of sleep, which, along with exercise and stress reduction, helps keep your immune system healthy and better able to withstand infection. Finally, if you do get sick, keep your distance from others to protect them from getting sick too. Cover your mouth and nose with a tissue when coughing or sneezing. If possible, stay home from work, school, and errands when you are sick to help prevent spreading your illness to others. A public message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. Now, let's pick that apart for a moment as Marxists. What are the inherent class biases in that
eat investment? Well,
yeah, eat well.
Exercise.
Get plenty of sleep. Exercise. All that costs money. Under capitalism,
money. How would I eat
money.
Well if I'm spending $1,858 and my mother...
Guess what our bill at Market Basket was last night? $170.
A lot of ramen noodles?
Yeah.
Right.
And that's not eating well.
That's not eating well.
We spent $173. This is for a family of four. $173.
For a week.
One grocery run. Last night, Market Basket.
Which one?
The one in, it's in, well, it doesn't matter. It's the same prices, really. Right. Bellingham.
Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's some cheap stuff there. And we calculated the average cost of each item was $2 and something, which is much cheaper than whole paycheck and all the other places, but not cheap enough, man. And we didn't go extravagant. Most extravagant thing we got was French toast fritters on special for $2.99. That's it. You know, everything else was like, you know, I made the mistake. Okay, you could call this extravagant. I actually got fish. I might have some protein fish. Bad. Shouldn't have done that.
Shrimp?
No shrimp. No. It wasn't shrimp. It was scallops. But they were $15 a pound, which is cheap. Relatively speaking. But I should have done it. But then that would only brought us down to 150, right? If I hadn't done it. Or 170 minus 15, whatever. But 173 something for, you know. I mean, come on, man.
That's 1 week.
Come on, 1 week. Well, some of that stuff will last longer, but next week we'll have to do it again. And hopefully it won't be as much. In fact, we went in the store. I was like, let's spend 85. Because it's not a paycheck week. So I'm dying. We're dying. We're using up a lot of money we want to save. And I feel like 85, 85, 85, and then we get in there. Just needed to maintain. I mean, your kids, you know, you have to, kids are picky eaters. You can't just serve them anything, or at least our kids. So you got to buy all sorts of stuff, you know, you got to cover it. And they eat a lot. They're getting, Justin's 14 now. He's eating a lot. Yeah. Anyway, the point is.
Now school. How do they feed him in school?
We feed him. Brings his lunch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. But and it's not very good lunch, I have to admit. So we're saving money on that. We're saving money on that, but whatever. So the biases here are plenty, eat right, cost too much money, get plenty of sleep. Also cost too much money because when you have to commute, when you have to get up early for a job, when you have to work extra hours, which a lot of people are doing, anecdotally speaking, I know a lot of workers now, myself included, that are working in places that are understaffed. And if they're understaffed, they're probably trying to get you to work extra hours, maybe giving you some overtime. If you're like me, you go for the overtime because you need the money. But it means you're working more. Then there's commuting. I don't get plenty of sleep. You know, and exercise. Too much money, and when's the time? Stress reduction? Yeah, that'd be good. But I don't really believe in that.
One, you need to eat right.
What is stress reduction? Tell me what that is.
Give me less work hours. Pay.
Exactly.
That's stress reduction.
I don't even know what stress reduction is. Because I don't know. I don't want to get to the point where I'm putting my peace of mind above my ability to analyze and see what's wrong with things around me or what's right about them, you know? Like this mindfulness stuff, there's some socialists doing very good work against that stuff. They're saying this is corporate propaganda that's trying to make you just get used to an unjust situation, and it's not really going to help you because of what stuff we're talking about. What's your peace of mind going to come from when you have to worry about putting food on the table, getting to your job, getting your kids health care and all that? I mean, health care, yeah, but also daycare and all that. Then there's the whole, you've heard the term public health, right? Mm-hmm. So public health studies in colleges and grad schools and so on. So I knew a doctor who got an additional degree in public health from Harvard, right? So public health looks at this and says, well, wait a minute now. You're talking about stuff that individuals can do here, like wash their hands. That assumes you have soap and water and all that, right, available, which most people do, right, in this country, I guess. But what about the larger issues of, is it epidemiology, study of diseases? I don't even know. Yep. What about the larger issues involved here? This coronavirus, and I'm pronouncing it wrong.
Corona.
No, it's not.
No.
Oh, no, you're right. No, you're right. It is corona. Maybe it's corona. Coronavirus. This is from capitalism. This is from the intersection of selling food as a commodity, as a mass commodity, in filthy conditions to make more money, you know? And it's also a disease where, to take care of it, the Chinese government, like any capitalist government, they played with it to see what would be most... They played with the... not the disease itself, I'm saying, but they played with the announcement of the disease, the timing and all that, keeping in mind what's going to be best for business. And of course, it all fell apart at a certain point. But there's a lot of things in here that really... And then they do say, this is the only thing I'll give to this public service announcement at the end, they say, if possible, stay home from work, school, and errands. It's not possible for a lot of people. In fact, they'll get fired.
That's a big
if they try to call in sick. You know, they will get fired. All right, one more public service announcement. Let's put this one back where it belongs. So this is right before the don't drink and drive public service announcement, which I'm not going to read. That's pretty obvious, but I'm going to read a one that's sort of similar to that. Speaking away from the mic, excuse me. Yes, there we go. Actually, it's going to take me a second to find it. You might... Say something, Diego. It's all yours.
So, you know, it's this whole thing. Oh, you got it?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay.
What were you going to get into? What was the topic?
The circus show.
You're still talking about that. All right, yeah.
Okay. You had to see it, Jeff. I wish you were there.
I did it on purpose. I didn't see it on purpose. That was not stress reduction. That was, I had more important things to do. What night was that? Was it Wednesday, Thursday? I had a meeting Wednesday. Maybe I could have seen it.
I want to say it might have been Wednesday.
I had a meeting.
Or Tuesday.
Tuesday. Yeah, I can't remember.
I don't know.
Yeah.
No, because I came back.
I was taking care of my kids on Thursday.
No. It was Tuesday night.
Tuesday night,
because I wasn't operating yet.
I don't know what I did instead. Anyway, pedestrian safety public service announcement. And this is actually local, but you'll see it as a national phenomenon. In fact, a famous actor who I didn't really like very much, but he was Orson Bean. He was just 90 years old.
British guy?
No, American. Oh. Well, maybe he was British originally. I don't know, but I think he was American. So he's in L.A. This is what I read today or heard today. I think I read it. I read it online. He's in L.A. He's 91 years old, but still apparently active, mobile, still acting. And he walks out into a street in L.A. I didn't get much information, but this is what I got. Walks out of a street in L.A., gets hit by a car. And he's surviving, but another car then hits him and kills him. So, you know, pedestrians are murdered all the time in this country by horrible driving, you know, under the influence and all that. And this is what this public service announcement is about. Or people just going too fast and all that. On February 8th, Allison Donovan, this is local, was killed as she walked through the crosswalk in front of the West Somerville Neighborhood School on Powder House Boulevard, two blocks away from Tufts University, including this radio station. After fatally hitting Allison and injuring her companion, the driver sped away and stopped later at a restaurant for drinks and dinner, and initially went to Home Depot to buy materials to hide the damage to his truck's body. Can you believe it? Walking is one. Now there's a jump in this PSA. It's not going to follow the story anymore. It's going to talk about the larger issue. Walking is one of the safest forms of transportation, but pedestrians need to pay attention to their surroundings, especially when crossing streets. Even if you have the walk light or other clear right of way, bad drivers are everywhere. Don't expect them to stop what they do or to stop for you. It's critical to comprehend some people really don't care that much about your life and would drive away if they hit you. Potentially life-saving message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Community Radio.
I've had that done with me on a bike.
Oh, yeah. I got hit by a car once.
No. I had two racists, you know, literally almost deliberately want to hit me. Yes.
Where was that?
Over by, are you familiar with Waltham, Watertown? That little stretch by Assembly, Arsenal Mall?
Yes.
I was going behind that. I was crossing my bike. It was a red light, so I crossed with confidence. But if I wasn't alert, and I see their little smirks in their face.
Yeah.
The way they were like, you know, like doing one of those, like pointing and saying, go.
Grimacing, yeah.
You know, I got out the way, literally missed me about inches. And I literally got on my bike and kept on going. This is where all the shooting was happening around 2013, 14, with all the, you know, right, white radical type racists, you know, stuff going on, where that kid did something in New what's that, in Connecticut, shot all those guys.
Yeah.
So during that time.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say 2013.
Did you get
14.
The license plate?
No,
I know that's
so
hard
fast.
To do. I know. I don't know why I said
and
that.
In my head, I freaked out. I got on my bike. I literally sped away because I'm like, they're probably coming around and you know, see if they can get me.
Everyone says, did you get the license plate? That's what everyone always
says.
Too late.
No. My adrenaline was not, I didn't have that in mind. Oh, look. You know, I didn't have time for that.
Yep.
My survivability, adrenaline kind of kicked in. It's like, I'm out.
Yep.
Like, I literally got
there's
the
yeah. There's deliberate. There's road rage. There's pedestrians getting hit. Accidentally, there's pedestrians getting hit deliberately.
I don't want to say racist. I don't know. Would you say that was racist? I don't know because I don't know them. But there was two white guys in the car pointing their finger.
Yeah.
Not even a car. It was an SUV. It was a heavy truck. It's like one of those Rams. You know, Ram Trans Am with a Ram logo on it.
Yeah.
And they were literally. If I wasn't paying attention, bah. I would have been going along with that.
Well, speaking of ways to get more cars off the street, which, you know, I hesitate saying that because, again, the liberals are going after us, meaning working people, and the conservatives, of course, but this happens to be a liberal attack.
Now, you were talking
this is going to be a slight different angle, same subject, but they want to raise, you probably read about this, they want to raise the gas tax. As a way to cut congestion. So they want to do all this stuff that really hurts you. I mean, this would just kill me because I'd have to go through it and I would, some of it, and I'd probably wouldn't have a choice. They want to raise, they want to put tolls where there aren't tolls. They want to, you know, raise parking fees. They want to raise gas tax, which is already, I think it's like 18 cents of every gallon is already gas tax. It might even be more than that. And they want to raise that higher. All these things, certain people, a lot of people can't avoid. They're going to end up paying that money. They're going to end up still driving. So it's all this like get more cars off the road, but not in a punitive way like that, not by attacking working people and commuters and all that, but by...
In reality, that's just them making more money.
Of course, yeah. And it doesn't necessarily translate into anything. Like tolls on the highway are supposed to be gone. Whenever they implement tolls, they say, we're only do this for X number of years. They literally say that. And then they end up being permanent. And then the highways have problems, and you wonder, you're generating all that toll money. Where does it go? It goes into a slush fund for the state, controlled by capitalist politicians. In this case, capitalist politician Democrats in Massachusetts. And the money ends up in some, you know, their fat salaries or wherever, you know. But, so what we're doing in Worcester, if you want more information about this, you can get in touch with the Independent Socialist Group at gmail.com. All one word, independentsocialistgroup@gmail.com. independentsocialistgroup@gmail.com. Now, I'm not sure this will turn into a big campaign, but there is some, and I hate to use the cliche, and it's also a stupid pun, there's some traction around this issue, around better bus service, free bus service, better bus service, and we're adding light rail, the need for light rail in the city. And there's other groups. So as I started to say before the break, there was a sort of think tank group or whatever that said, yeah, Worcester could do the free bus thing, no problem, you know? And other groups have chimed in since then saying, yeah, it could be free, but you have to expand the service, which is absolutely true. And then we're chiming in with light rail. We need to add light rail to that. And it's funny because there's this politician in Worcester who started out as a Republican, which is extremely rare. And then he switched to Democrat, one of those switcheroo guys again. And it could go either way. And he's very right-wing in a lot of issues. And he all of a sudden took up the free bus thing. We're not sure why. We can't figure it out. Like, is he doing it because he thinks it's temporarily popular or gives him some press? We don't think he's legitimate about it. And we don't approach this like, you know, lobbying Democrats is the way forward anyway. It's got to be middle of mass movement. So that's what we're trying to see if there's interest in that. There seems to be. So I have this pamphlet that was passed out at a meeting by Better Buses for Worcester event by the Ridership Advisory Committee, which is not a city thing, total like community thing, small, but they're talking about, you know, free bus service, which is good. So the demands that some socialists in the Independent Socialist Group put forward in Worcester are make the WRTA, that's Worcester Regional Transit Authority, fare free, meaning free, no fares. Fare is what you pay when you get into a bus or whatever. And they only have buses, no subway. If the city can, that's why we're talking about the light rail thing, yeah. If the city can give a handout of over 100 million to the PSOC, they can find 3 million to go fare free. No job cuts, no pay cuts. The money used to make the WRTA fare free should not come from laying off bus drivers or fare processors, but instead tax the rich, the major hospitals, and the private universities to pay for a stronger WRTA. So Worcester, again, second largest city in Massachusetts, near about 45 minutes to an hour west of Boston, is poor, much poorer than Boston in a lot of ways. But they still have a bunch of universities, and they have this big, big, big hospital called UMass Memorial for the entire area.
The budget you said was not much. Was $8 million
for the buses? Is only $8 million. Yeah,
drops in the
right. But you'd have to improve that. You'd have to get more money, which you can get from, again, raising the taxes on the rich and big business and so on. Or if the city can't do all that, it can build a movement to get the state to do that. Oh, I'm sorry. Going fare free would only cost $2 to $3 million in increased funding. That's on top of, I think, a certain amount. But in 2017, the exact opposite happened to what we're talking about. They raised, instead of going to a free system, they raised fares. They increased fares. And this led to, guess what? Less revenue and fewer riders. Can't afford it. People walk. In fact, somebody did a study. People walk more in Worcester than any comparable size city. I don't know if it was in the state or the country because of that, the fare thing, the transit thing. I mean, in other words, the buses don't run that much. That's a problem. That would make you walk. They don't go enough places. That would make you walk, but also the cost makes you walk. A fare-free transit system would increase ridership and reduce pollution. Massive investment in transportation, public transportation, including building light rail, expanding public transit means more jobs, massive reduction of traffic and pollution, and a greener Worcester. Democratic control of the WRTA by bus riders, the bus drivers union, and community organizations. Public transit must be accountable to the people. A just transition to green and renewable energy in Worcester. And you can fill in the blank for other cities through public works programs that create well-paying jobs. Now, internationally, there's a lot of cities in Europe that have gone to free fare or, I would say a lot, there's some that have gone to free fare or, again, partial, you know, certain parts of their system on certain times free. This little country called Luxembourg, that everyone laughs about how small it is, they went to a completely free system, both light rail, railroad, and bus. But there's other examples. Like I said earlier, the Kansas City, Missouri example, the soon-to-be, hopefully, Oregon example in Portland and others. I had a list. The Globe wrote an article, and I wrote them back saying, you know, because the reporter didn't do his research or the editor didn't allow it in, with a list of additional cities that I got some doing some quick research that are free or partial free, large part free. And they never answered. They never corrected their article either.
No, in Houston, I had a system where you get a ticket, and they tell you don't lose that ticket because you use that ticket to transfer anywhere else.
That's not that. This is free, completely free.
Yeah. But even though it was like a dollar.
Yeah.
You get in for a dollar, you get the ticket, and you can do transfer.
Oh, that's good.
You know. I don't know how much it is now, but I remember Houston.
Yeah. Well. One thing that cities could run into in what we're talking about is they don't have the power to tax these big nonprofits like hospitals and universities. But what they do have is these places are supposed to give, often promise to give, and sometimes give payment in lieu of taxes. And they could easily be pressured to actually follow through on that. They don't have to give it, but there's tradition of giving that and to increase that amount of money. So, for example, UMass Memorial is a nonprofit hospital, so they'd have to pay payment in lieu of taxes according to the screwed-up tax code where nonprofits that are really businesses get nonprofit status. So UMass Memorial has $171 million in offshore accounts.
Repeat that.
That's a nonprofit. $171 million in offshore accounts. It's a private business, but it's got the name of a nonprofit on it, which is a joke. But also in terms of how to get this stuff, we can't rely, I'm quoting from the pamphlet written by Independent Socialist Group, we can't rely on city council to implement the improved, expanded, and fare-free transit system Worcester needs. Winning free bus service will require an organized effort from bus riders and community organizations supported by the labor movement in Worcester and statewide, including the Bus Drivers Union in Worcester, ATU Local 22, Amalgamated Transit Union Workers Union. And as long as we tolerate a capitalist system that puts profit over the needs of the working people, we will have to fight to defend any gains we make. Building a new political party for working people would be a huge step in the right direction. So get organized, build the movement, join the socialists. So I really like that. And that's the right method to not fool people and say, oh, you get a reform, it's going to last forever. Under capitalism, that won't be the case. You're going to have to fight for funding and just to get it implemented in the first place. And so that's, again, I would predict, maybe I'm wrong, a lot of things could get in the way, but I predict that's going to become a more popular demand around the country, free transit. And it is, it's a human right, really, when you think about it, to be able to get to where you need to get.
Kurt Douglas died, by the way.
I know, and he's claiming, one of the things I was really surprised to hear about.
Not because you would talk about that 91-year-old actor.
Yeah. No, I understand. No, that's fine.
It just popped in my head.
That's fine.
Kurt Douglas. What did he do? He actually had Trumbull's name on his movie, The Spartacus.
That's what I was going to talk about,
so
yeah.
He had a lot to do with the 10.
He claims he had a lot to do with breaking the blacklist.
He helped.
Spartacus,
not totally. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the debate. Someone wrote a book saying he didn't really do that much, but he did do something. And so leaving it at that level, because I don't know the details, he lobbied and got Dalton Trumbo to be able to use his real name in the script for Spartacus, which wasn't done until 1960 something, maybe 60 or 61.
62.
And so that significantly broke the blacklist, that happening. Now, I'm not sure what the counter arguments are that it wasn't that big a deal, but it was a big deal, it seems like to me. And then there were, the thing I read gave another example that he was involved with. So later he's quoted as saying, I was most proud of breaking the blacklist. Oh yeah, the other example was Lonely Are the Brave. Apparently, again, Dalton Trumbo involved, got his name on it, boom, around that time. And so I was impressed by that. He was a
I was impressed with his age, 103.
Yeah, he lived long. He had a stroke though, kind of. He wasn't as active lately, but last 10 years or whatever. But he, I wasn't totally surprised by the politics because
he's from a Russian.
No, Polish.
He said Russian.
Oh, they're wrong. Russian immigrant. Pretty sure he was Polish immigrant, but maybe I'm just, you know, I grew up in. My mother's side of the family is all Polish.
Is Douglas a last name?
No, not at all.
Douglas?
Not at all. But I just always read he was Polish. In fact, I think he has roots in upstate New York, where I'm from. And so all the Polish people would talk about famous Polish people, and he was one of them. But
okay.
Maybe we're wrong. Every nationality likes to pump itself up, you know? And but the thing with the thing I was going to say about him was not the Polish thing. But why he was, I believe that he had left-wing politics or sympathies is because he, not only, he did grow up, his career was blossoming during McCarthyism and after, but he also was old enough, like you were just saying, to remember before that. And a lot of, but as you know, a lot of Hollywood actors, just like the rest of society, became left-wing during the Depression, you know? And not necessarily because of the Depression, but because of the growth of the Communist Party and unions and others fighting fascism and fighting also against the policies of the Depression and so on. The effects of the Depression and all that. Also in Worcester, and I'll just give this some headline mention.
Pies again?
Yeah, Table Talk Pies. You see Table Talk Pies in your, Market Basket or wherever you shop.
I had a boss, I swear. I told you about this. In 95, my first official on the payroll job.
He liked Table Talk Pies?
He was around that tabletop display. Like, it was his, like, are you getting endowments from this thing? It's like, he didn't care anything about Lord. Don't mess with the tabletops, you know. We wanted him there. So I wanted. His people walk in. He was so adamant about it. Like, he's getting commissioned.
Maybe they were. Maybe they're getting a deal. Well, the whole thing of product placement in supermarkets is supposedly really corrupt, but I don't know anything about it. But here's the thing where Table Talk. So Worcester still has some manufacturing. We've identified like about 5 places that are big manufacturing places that desperately need to be unionized, and the labor movement hasn't got its act together to do that.
Manufacture?
Well, one is Polar. You've heard of Polar Beverages.
Yeah, I know.
Now, they had a union, and it got busted way back, like in the 70s or something stupid, and they need a union really bad. Table Talk needs a union super bad. In fact, at the City Hall thing I'm about to explain, somebody from the Independent Socialist Group, on Everin, he did a speech in front of City Hall. He worked at Table Talk trying to get a union going there. And we were working with IBW, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, in Worcester to try to get a union going in Table Talk, and it never took off. It should have, but it was complicated in terms of it's a job that basically kills you, like, physically, you know? And so it was hard to stay in there and organize. And also, they have high turnover, really high turnover. And also, frankly, the union leadership didn't really put anything into it. They just wanted it to happen. You know, they didn't really put resources into it much. They let us meet there and stuff, but they didn't do enough. But it could happen again. It needs to happen again. But the point of the story is that they have basically the system in place in Worcester of giving corporate welfare, like city money and perks and stuff to these companies. Well, at least to Table Talk, probably to others. And this public, also spending public money on this new stadium, which is really bad for the Paw Sox in Worcester. They're moving to Worcester. Spending public money on the new stadium is really bad. they are moving one of the Table Talk factories. There's like three of them or something like that. And they're giving Table Talk like incentives to do for that or money for that. But before that, even they had an agreement with Table Talk about paying certain amount of wages and so on. And Table Talk has broken that agreement. And they're very, like I said, very dangerous workplace with a lot of OSHA violations. There's this thing in Worcester agreement with this company plus the state thing about $15 minimum wage. They're breaking that. They're not doing it. So, for example, not paying $50 an hour minimum wage to workers who need family-sustaining jobs while a multi-million dollar company gets millions in taxpayer subsidies, and that's what I'm talking about, corporate welfare taxpayer subsidies, is not the type of economic development that our community deserves or respects. That's a quote from someone in Worcester. And anyway, so they had a city hall hearing about this. So this is the point of the story is to name and shame this horrible corporation, Table Talk. But also, they need a union really bad, and the workers should, you know. I mean, there's been different attempts at getting a union, hasn't happened yet. But they need a union really bad, and also, this is a city like most maybe all Massachusetts cities, for all I know, totally run by the Democrats, right? I mean, politically, totally the Democrats just dominate. Sometimes unanimously, I think that's the case now in Worcester. I think it's all Democrats. I'll double check, but it's always been a vast majority of Democrats running the city council. So people come in like Everin and make these heart-wrenching pleas to don't give corporate welfare subsidies to this, you know, huge corporation. And what do the Democrats do?
They do it anyway.
They do it anyway. They give it to them anyway. Yep, there you go. A couple of you make speeches or whatever, but they end up, you know, second time at least doing that. And during the union drive, word wasn't really out about the union drive, but I think the people involved knew about it. The one who I'm about to say, which was basically a Democratic Party politician, comes in and does a photo op on the floor of the factory with Sir Charles Faker.
Oh God!
Right? Say what a great place it is. Just as we're launching the union drive. Anyway, so we're starting to run out of time, unfortunately, because I had a lot more to go into. We both did. But I want to say what we said earlier, that I'm just going to quote from a announcement here. Who's this announcement from? This is from #EarthDay, #StrikeWithUs, StrikeWithUs.org, Climate Strike Team, blah, blah. And I'm not sort of like saying the strike thing too much here, because I think this is a little simplistic about striking, but any sort of actions or big protests and these things would be great these days. So, quote, all over the country, young people and adults have already begun organizing for the biggest climate strike yet. From Wednesday, April 22nd to Friday, April 24th, we will join together and use our collective voice to demand climate action. Time is not on our side. This must be the decade of climate action, and it has to begin in this critical election year. Has to begin this critical election year. I don't know. It should have begun already. I mean, what is critical election year? All right. From April 22nd to 24th, young people are once again asking adults to back us up as we take our movement to the next level. Here's a quick rundown of what organizers are planning for each day. Now, the main thing I would say probably is going to be the 22nd of April, because that is the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. And it's a day of mass mobilization. We will kick off the 3 days with a demonstration of our collective power and unity with tens of millions of young people and adults participating in thousands of strikes and Earth Day events across the country. On this historic day of climate action, we are centering indigenous people and people of color, reflecting our personal connections to the earth and recommitting ourselves to the movement. Day two is Stop the Money Pipeline Day of Action. That's April 23rd. It looks like it is going to target financial institutions and universities. And then finally, day three, Day of Political Action, Friday, April 24th. This is the one that probably falls apart. They probably want to lobby Democrats or vote for Democrats. Big mistake. Democrats are just as culpable in climate in terms of passing laws and doing corporate welfare and all that other stuff in favor of polluting extraction industries. A lot of them get their money from those industries, oil and so on. Democrats are just as bad as Republicans on this, I would argue. Trump is obviously in there now, taking things to a rotten level in terms of trying to get rid of you know, laws against pollution and all that. But the reality is that on a local level, places where Democrats control, including places that are controlled, they've been doing that a lot.
A lot longer,
but also even recently. Now we need, 24th, political change, leaders, blah, blah, show up at the polls, why, who are you going to vote for, doesn't say. Voter registration effort, so Friday's the one I'm really going to not go to. I like people being registered to vote, but they have to have something to vote for, you know. There will be millions of concerned young people and adult allies participating in thousands of climate action across the country. Yeah, yeah. All right, so anyway, that's coming up. I hope it's big. But the reason I say the strike part is problematic is because it would have to be much better organized for workers to be able to go on strike. If you have so many workers, like you do in the United States now, they're in non-union plants, if they walk out to go to a climate action, this is Wednesday through Friday, I believe, they're going to lose their jobs, you know? And it's very hard for unorganized workers to get organized to the point where they can tell a boss, no, we're going to go on strike anyway. Remember the day without immigrants? Remember that protest in 2010? That recently? Okay, 2010.
Is that the one May Day that we went to?
Yep, May 1st, day without immigrants.
We were struggling with another guy who was like, go back home! It was like, oh, you don't look American.
So I remember that. The thing I was going to say, though, was that there were people that went on strike, that worked in non-union places and got away with it, which is great. Some didn't, though. Remember, there were people in the socialist group that we were in at the time that were going to the workplace and trying to say, yeah, they went on strike, but it's okay, whatever, you know. And that worked to a certain extent, but not totally. And I'm not blaming anyone because people went out on their own. My memory of that time is that people were just like, there was no union really organizing a strike. There were people just going out on their own, even if they were in a union. Like, remember at the rally at the Common? Were you there as well? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. There was SEIU had a presence there. But I don't think they actually called a strike in all the places they represent. You know what I mean? Officially. So, it would be much, much better if there's... To make these strikes real, if they were real strikes, workers withdrawing their labor. Not, you know, a student strike doesn't have the power a worker strike has. Student strike's good, that's great, just doesn't have the power a worker strike has. Yeah,
it's like what's happening now with Petrobras over in Brazil.
I don't know what's happening.
Oh, there's a big strike.
Really? I didn't hear about that.
All the workers are on strike.
By the way, that we should have mentioned
Petrobras,
earlier.
That's short for Petroleum Brazil.
Yep.
That's the company. They want to privatize, and they're having a big...
Wow.
I'm watching this on television.
Bolsonaro, yeah.
So they, they're on a major strike. It's been going on for at least 2 weeks now, and it's, I think, from what I heard earlier this morning, it's still on strike because they want to privatize. The bosses want to privatize this Petrobras.
Did Telesur write about France at all?
They did talk about France, Macron and the...
Or talk about France, sorry. Yeah.
Talk about
France. I mean, recently, because wave has not died down yet.
No.
They're saying it has. Or that when they... Actually, most corporate media, even in France, is trying to ignore that strike wave.
But Telesur obviously is left.
Yeah. And it's not at dying down completely.
No.
So I finally read an article about it, but it wasn't from a source you'd expect. And... It wasn't a left-wing source either, and they tried to, like, say, well, the strike numbers are dwindling and so on. And that might be true, but it was still a big strike. This was only, like, four days ago.
Yeah.
Really, really big.
Yeah.
And, yeah, protest movements can't last forever. And that's probably a lesson in the movement that's happening there, the relearning that lesson. But it's still a really good, amazingly long protest movement, now including both yellow vest people that are still protesting and the unions. And youth are out as well a little bit. So it's really an amazing movement. One thing I read, though, I didn't know this, even though I lived in France for a short while, I didn't know this, that apparently strikes in France, often they're not trying to stop scabs, which is a big mistake if that's true. They are going out on strike and not setting up like militant picket lines. But in some places they do. So I don't really know the story. I really don't know the true story there.
That's weird because you
it is weird.
Think that the French were the first ones to say, you're not passing this
I think
line.
In some places they are. In other places they're like, they just rely on people going out and the protest publicity aspect of it. But I really don't know for sure. But I read that. I was really surprised by that. That some places they would, like they gave an example of a strike that was happening that X number of the workforce still showed up. I'm not sure that's a function of not having picket lines. I remember being on picket lines in France. I think it might be more people that you know, there's different, that you can have different unions in the same workplace in France. So one union might go on strike and the other one might not. I'm not saying that's excuses it. Everyone should go out together. I'm just saying that might be what's going on. So anyway, we're running out of time here. What should we put out for our last thing? Should we do Duke or something else?
Something else, I mean.
Okay.
Do you have a...
Yeah, I got something.
John Lennon?
Well, I couldn't find that. You know, it's buried in my bag somewhere, so... I'm gonna do if you don't mind. Oh, you're sick of that?
Is that punk?
Are you sick of that?
No, I like that.
Yeah, it is.
I like
that. Yeah. I play them a lot. No one ever heard of them. No one's ever heard of them, but they're around, and... I don't know which one to put in. Some of them I really like. I'll do this one. Yeah, we'll do five. Anyway, while we're slowly working our way out of the studio here, thanks again for bringing in Duke Ellington, Diego.
Thank you.
We'll see everyone in a week and a half. Or, I'm sorry, in 2 weeks. Hopefully. With another edition of Socialist Radio. And there's a big article I wanted to really get into today, just didn't have time. And it's okay because it is a long article. It's by the Marxist Left Review, published in Australia. And I think it's issue number 19, summer 2020, even though we're not there yet. Anyway, MarxistLeftReview.org, you'll find it. It
says, you know why? Because it is summer over there.
Oh, right, it's summer over there. Thank you. Yeah. Duh.
Everyone's Southern probably Hemisphere.
Like, everyone's probably like, yeah, this guy doesn't know his hemispheres. And they're right, I don't know my hemisphere.
It's summer in El Salvador.
Yeah, I've never been in the Southern Hemisphere, I don't think. Have I?
Don't go there if you don't like heat.
I don't like heat. But what if I go? What if I go down, way down, like Patagonia or something? Won't it be cooler?
You're talking about
That's Argentina.
That's Argentina. Maybe I don't. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So
is it cooler in the Patagonia?
I don't know. But it's getting down towards the Arctic Circle, right? So wouldn't it be?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be cooler?
It'd be fairer. That's for sure.
Come on, where's this thing? All right, so anyway.
But, in Central America, you have no, it doesn't rain a lot.
Yeah.
It's just dry heat.
Well, I want to come back to this article because it's quite good. It says, we've been down this road before, Jesse Jackson and the Democrats and the left. Now, why is this interesting in particular? Because it's the whole thing about, can you reform the Democratic Party? Should you do an inside-outside strategy, take the ballot line, all that kind of garbage we're hearing from some of the left about the Democratic Party. But also, it's got... I've been reading articles lately as I research more and more Sanders, that Sanders was very much against working in the Democratic Party, even though he had endorsed Mondale in 84. But the 88 Jesse Jackson campaign, he saw through that, for his purposes at least, a strategy that you could work in the Democratic Party. And then he makes that deal with them in 92, soon after that. So listen to this quote by Sanders in 86. Notice it's before the second Jesse Jackson campaign, the bigger one in 88. Quote, "You don't change the system from within the Democratic Party. My own feelings are that the Democratic Party is ideologically bankrupt. We have to ask ourselves, why would we work within the Democratic Party if we don't agree with anything the Democratic Party says?" Bernie Sanders, 1986. Of course, he's singing a different tune now, completely different. Now, here's a guy that was a socialist. He passed away, but he was in the Socialist Workers Party, part of the New Left. Anyway, with few exceptions, the Rainbow Coalition was just another name for keeping progressives in the Democratic Party. That's Peter Camejo, who lived, you know, into the 90s. I think he died late 90s or early 2000s. So this is a whole article about this, but it goes into a lot more history of left populists, you know, progressive populists in the Democratic Party, and how the left oriented to them. It's really quite good, and hopefully we can just get into that next show. So that's about it for Socialist Radio. We're going to go off the air a little bit early in order to, so if somebody comes in for a new show, they're going to have plenty of time to get on. What's our last words here?
Well, power to the people and keep being independent and read a lot, research. Don't just jump into, you know, this reform the Democratic Party, because it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and also
we have to form our own party, our own, you know.
Yeah, we need, and by the way, when we say form our own party, we're talking about a step forward, not the ultimate step or whatever. We're talking about like a workers' party, a broad, progressive, left, big tent workers' party that we really need just to get decent reforms.
And get those, you know, those and get programs them refunded. In there that's really kind of fundamentally changed housing, healthcare, education.
Child care, education, And we would ask, we would demand, actually, because he's a public figure and he claims certain things. We demand that someone like Sanders, so-called progressive or so-called left populist, that he get, he break with the Democrats, you know? And he started out early on in the 70s. He was already broken with the Democrats. But anyway, so we're going to leave you with New Model Army from the album they came out with a while ago called Original 20, and a song called Here Comes the War. I guess my last words, that was really good, Diego. I would just say get in touch with the Independent Socialist Group on Facebook. Find out more about how to talk to Sanders supporters about real socialism and organize people, not just through electoral politics, but also things that are happening right now on the ground, like that free transit stuff I was talking about and other things. The corporate media wants to focus all your attention only on personalities and only on elections of two corporate political parties, and we deserve and need a lot more than that. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon.
To defend the flag hanging limp and bloody above the village church.